This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high above the milkpacking district, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A student's father is accused of luring a classmate online. A mom is accused of staging a phony funeral for her daughter. Oh, and Beatles are on iTunes now.
I'm sorry, what's that? President Barack Obama?
Yeah, that was it.
Thank you. As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Tuesday, November 16th, 2010. A Portland man is accused of trying to use Facebook to talk a 16-year-old girl into having sex with him.
I think you mean the Facebook, Dawn.
The Facebooks. The man first contacted the girl through the Facebook. She told her parents something wasn't right, according to police. Detective said 42-year-old Randy Lee Schill...
Randy Lee Schill! You're not getting off the Facebook!
The father of a fellow student...
Sorry.
...wanted to chat with her online. Her parents then told the police. FBI agents then posed as the girl on her Facebook page. A federal criminal complaint reveals detailed messages where the suspect wanted to have sex. The girl's father, who wanted to remain anonymous, said he's proud of his daughter, but furious at the suspect. He's a danger to society. He should not be anywhere near kids or families or on the street. This is the kind of guy who needs to be behind bars for a very long time.
So wait, so this is, so he's the teacher?
He's the father of another student.
Oh, okay, so that's how he knows. So how old is the girl?
16.
She's 16, he's, I don't know.
42.
Okay. 42. He's the father of a friend, so he's like, hey, what's that little friend of yours? They don't identify the girl,
no,
I guess. So who's that little friend?
Let's just call her Becky.
That's Becky. Oh, really? Does Becky have a last name? Excellent. Fantastic.
Is she on the Facebook?
Yeah, she on the Facebook, and then he just starts sending her a lot. And so, but she must have... Here's the thing about Facebook. I know that I just sound like such a Rube or Sarah when I say things like this. But so the deal with Facebook, unless you specifically set it otherwise, you can just be proactively messaged by people who don't know you, right?
Yeah.
Because it's that thing sometimes you try to send somebody a message, like, you must be a friend to send somebody. But they have to set it that way. Is the default setting that, like, if I didn't know you from anybody, you're just some chick in Kansas, can I just send you a message unsolicited?
I don't know, but the thing is, though, he was the father of a friend of hers, so he probably friended her, and she went, oh, yeah, it's Janice's dad, Randy, I'll just friend him back,
so,
and, you know.
That's my thing, is, like, did he friend her as himself, or, like, as somebody else? Did he say, like, this is Phil, I sit next to you in the class with math?
Well, considering she told her parents... That, you know, this is weird.
Hey, this 42-year-old guy says he's in my math class.
Well, I think more like my friend's dad is, like, coming on to me on Facebook.
He's talking about my vagina. It's making me feel unsettled.
Yeah. So, don't do that.
No, it's bad.
No, it is very weird because, like, I'm on Facebook and I have, like, my my husband's, like, one of my husband's nephews friended me. Well, he, well, I don't know if he, I don't think he's hot. He's like 14, but he's like, but he is like 6'5".
He's an aesthetically pleasing young man.
They're monsters in my husband's family. But he, like, friended me on Facebook, I think. And it was kind of like, I don't know. Because I know. I don't think that you should read about me, like, drinking Four Loko on the radio.
He's not going to get it from you, Don. He's going to get it on the street. I mean, let's just be honest. Better he get that education from family.
You know, my occasional, you know, randy jokes about naughty things. It's like,
He might hear about how you occasionally have relations with members of your family. And then, you know, he gets ideas, you know. The young set, they They don't understand. Look, I'm just saying, you're the one who nearly effed your uncle. I say it's news. I mean, I can't. Look, those are just facts, Don. So I'm just saying, he's your nephew.
That happened a very long time ago, and why do you have to keep bringing that up?
You're sexy Aunt Don, so I'm just saying. Ka-chow. That's what I'm saying right there. Ka-chow.
A Richmond woman, in Richmond, Indiana, that is, an Indiana woman, admits to orchestrating a phony funeral for her daughter, but denies she was trying to scam loved ones out of money. Angela Boyd contacted the pastor of the New Life Church of Nazarene last week and asked to hold a funeral there for her daughter, Caitlin, who she said had been raped and killed by her father in Iowa. The Reverend Ronald Chappelle agreed, said that when Boyd arrived at the church for the funeral, everything seemed legitimate. He said,
"You're right, she has been raped and killed. Look at that."
Well, she had an urn. And she had a plastic box and had written on it, "Donations to the Autistic Society in memory of Caitlin."
Is the daughter even autistic, or did she just make that up, too?
I don't know. Okay. But she also had something called a memory blanket, which I'm not sure what that is.
The hell is a memory blanket? Is that like the kind of, does it keep its shape? It holds the form of the dead person for years afterward.
No, I assume it's probably something that you embroider someone's name on to remember them after they're dead. I don't know.
Okay.
Anyway,
you just write it down.
So the pastor gave the eulogy because it all seemed, you know, legit. After which he said Boyd delivered a heart-wrenching speech about her daughter's life. "People were just bawling and crying and moved by emotion, and my heart was just aching," Chappelle said. But after the tribute, the pastor said Boyd's brother stood up and told the crowd it was all a lie, and that Caitlin was alive and well, and claimed his sister was trying to scam people out of money.
The best part is how he waited until the end of, like, you know, everybody's sort of tearful recollection. Maybe he just wanted to see, like, what they would say.
Yeah, what is she up to, anyway?
Or, you know, or he was just curious as to, like, what they really thought of her. Like, maybe he thought that that would be the time where, you know, I remember this one time that she and I knocked off a liquor store together. Maybe he was trying to get a little bit of a, like, a preview of what his own wake would be like.
Yeah, who doesn't want that, really?
Seriously, he was trying to do a little Tom Sawyer thing there.
Well, apparently after he stood up and accused her of this, she ran screaming from the church and left the donation money behind.
Awesome.
She was approached on Monday by a television news crew and said she had been told that her daughter was dead and she was only trying to do the right thing. She says there was nothing in it about money or anything like that. There was no trying to fleece people for money. Asked if she had called her daughter to check on her welfare, she replied, "No, I didn't try to call. I didn't further investigate, and I should have."
Did she say what was in the urn?
No. No. Okay. Yeah, because I think the whole urn thing kind of weighs against her.
So to speak.
In this story here.
Ha! Ha!
What?
Ha! The urn thing weighs against fleecing them for money. The urn thing.
Oh, urn.
I say again. Ha! Ah, whatever. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm, the home of punnery. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday, November 16th, 2010. You can also get this program on your mobile device if you like. It is mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. You can get it as a direct MP3 download later on today at this website or at legionofnews.com and so forth. This is Don.
Hi.
Hi. Is gravity different on your side of the room? That's like the third time. You're like, whack.
This microphone here, and I bent over, and it hit me in the head.
You were talking about, like, I don't have to hold these pieces of paper in my hand. I'll be tired. Okay.
I didn't say that at all.
Weren't you going to hold the paper in your other hand, but you told me that it was just going to be real drag by the end of the day?
Well, no. It's because I keep hurting my left arm, and part of it's because I hold the news in the left arm, and I keep holding things. So I tried moving everything around. I was going to have all the papers on the right side and the laptop on the left side, and then I realized that just wasn't going to work because it was just chaos. It was just anarchy over here, and it just didn't make any sense.
Okay.
So I put it all back. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you try to change stuff up, and it doesn't work, so you change it back.
I'm just sitting over here doing what I do. You're listening to Legion of News. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program comes out today shortly after 1 o'clock. Today we'll have a top five, also another installment of the greatest songs ever made. We'll talk about Boardwalk Empire from Sunday, which we just got watched last night, because like, there's a lot of TV and very little time. So, you know, what are you going to do? I could say we're going to talk about Dexter, but that would be a lie. That would be a fib, a falsehood.
Because you apparently failed. You failed in your Dexter watching.
I guess. I mean, I failed in the sense that I didn't do it. But if you're going to ask me really in the... You know, just in the sort of philosophical sense, do I view it as a failure? No. No, I do not. And I don't think that answer is going to change. I think it's going to be the same answer I give next week.
I remember last week, you were going on and on about how, like, even though it was painful, you were making that sacrifice for the people, for
oh, no.
the listeners.
I would have made the sacrifice if I'd remembered. I just forget. It just is one of those things that just, like, you know what it is? It's like on my to-do list where sometimes things just scroll off the bottom of the page. You know, because they're just not there. It's gone so far to the bottom of my mental to-do list that it can't even be seen. I basically need opera glasses just to even find the Dexter notation on my mental list of tasks. Here is Dawn Taylor.
President George W. Bush, while on tour... Hello? Ex-President George W. Bush, while on tour to promote his new book, Decision Points, said some NATO allies turned out not to be willing to fight in Afghanistan... And he addressed criticism that his administration took its eye off the ball by ordering troops to invade Iraq.
Our assumption that we had ample troops, U.S. and and NATO troops, turned out to be a not true assumption. And so we
it
adjusted.
Never stops, does it?
And I completely disagree with the take eye off the ball. I found that to be empty political rhetoric.
He's just effing with us. He's just dropping words randomly. I think he just said, I disagree with take eye off of ball. I have to listen to that one more time. It's like somebody's doing an ad hoc translation from a kung fu version of George Bush's life.
Our assumption that we had ample...
Our assumption?
I think he's trying to say our, but he's...
Our assumption that we had ample troops, U.S. and and NATO troops, turned out to be a not true assumption. And so we adjusted. And I completely disagree with the take eye off the ball. I found that to be empty
political rhetoric. Take eye off the ball. You! Take eye off a ball!
Is he on drugs?
You no put eye on ball here!
Do they have him medicated?
This upstanding establishment. What?
It sounds like he's medicated.
Yes, yes it does. I take it as an article of faith, by the way, that all of our presidents are medicated all the time. You go back and watch that videotape of Bill Clinton in 98 when he's on television wearing a tie that Monica Lewinsky gave him after stooping him in the back room and just, you know, I didn't have he's gacked to the nines. That guy, he's drugged like a polar bear in a crate. I mean, how could you not be? I mean, we've talked about that like, with Barack Obama before. Like, how could you get through the day? A bunch of jackasses on TV. He was born in Indonesia. You know, he must just, like, come and dose me again. I can't take these guys. They're just, what did it hit me? Hit me again, Doc, right here, you know?
Bush says such statements regarding his administration are just empty political rhetoric.
What happened in Afghanistan was that our NATO allies turned out not to be willing to fight.
Uh-huh.
The former president says he doesn't regret backing the federal bailout program.
I knew we were hurt. I don't think a lot of us realized how long it would take to get out of the mess. I will tell you this, though, that the TARP, you mentioned the $700 billion. We spent half of it when I was president, and it has been repaid.
It's a TARP!
Mm. Yeah, okay.
I don't even know where to go with that. I mean, I just went the Akbar route because that was all I had. I had nothing else. Here's the thing about George W. Bush.
I hear him talk, and it just fills me with rage.
See, and fine, sure. I mean, look, as they say, apparently everywhere now, that's your truth, Dawn.
Oh, I know.
You know, which is fine. And I get why people are that way. It is the same reason why people get, upset at Glenn Beck or Keith Olbermann or whatever. Yeah. But it's like, he's just such a clown. It's like, how can you even... The thing that's frustrating... Here's why George Bush frustrates me. He frustrates you... Well, I don't know why. He fills you with anger because...
Because he's just the fact that he is actually out pushing his book at this moment and still continuing to coast on this sad, horrible career he had as the puppet for Cheney and the right.
Well,
I just, you know.
Look, brother got to eat. I mean,
yeah.
What would you, I mean, would you rather him be doing something where he could cause real harm?
Mm.
You know, that guy, he's one of those guys, as long as he's sitting behind a desk with, like, some crayons and he's, you know, keep him occupied is my thing with George Bush. He's like Bam Bam on the Flintstones, but, like, if you kicked him in the head real hard, like when he was, you know, like if he was shooing a horse or something. You know, you want to keep him busy so that he's not just, I'm going to order a first strike because I'm bored, you know, or whatever. You keep that guy away from all the buttons and, you know, and anything sharp. My whole thing with George W. Bush is it frustrates me because he just becomes impossible to parody. It's like parodying Gilligan's Island. There's just no way to do it. It just, there's nowhere to go with that. I mean, if you think about all of the parodies you saw of George W. Bush, none of them were really that successful, I would say, you know, in terms of comedian, I mean, The Onion did some. When they would do the weekly radio address as George Bush, they were pretty great, you know. And there was, you know, you could make an argument for That's My Bush kind of thing. But even then, it's like you watch That's My Bush and you go, well, it just kind of looks like the guy I see on TV every day. I guess they were going to be a parody, but I haven't seen it yet because it's like there's nowhere you can take that guy.
I guess it's not even rage that it fills me with. It's just this deep disappointment in humanity in general. That, I mean, you know, we voted in this coked up frat boy, and we all knew it. And that's the thing, is while he was, and we all, it's like as a nation, decided to go along with this sort of, you know, this play acting thing of like, oh yes, he choked on a pretzel. Yeah, he wasn't drunk and falling down and smacking his head on the coffee table. No, he choked on a pretzel.
I think
we'll all go along with that.
I think
that.
The assessment that, quote, we all, quote, voted him in is probably inaccurate. Yeah. I think that's a revision of the text. But, you know, I'm just saying.
I guess I just get sad at society.
I like the idea that it's, you know what it is? It's not like we brought back Gerald Ford. It's like we brought back Chevy Chase as Gerald Ford, as George W. Bush. We needed humor. It was a time to laugh, Don, and George W. Bush helped us to laugh.
And I realize now that I may be deflecting some of my anger from something else onto George Bush.
What's the other something else?
We don't have time to go into this, and I'm not going to go into it. Let's just say that...
Is this next hour?
After reading a couple of messages on Facebook and Twitter about how awesome Michael Vick is this morning, because apparently he played a real good football game last night... I was just like seriously, I was so angry. So I think I might be just sort of projecting some of
you got to do it the other way. You ought to take your anger at George W. Bush. You see, Michael Vick should be the Velcro for that. He should just be, he's like a sin eater. He could be the guy onto whom you just put your agita about everything else. You know, you're upset about the TSA or scabies or something. Michael Vick. It all goes to him.
Enough anger about Michael Vick just for Michael Vick.
No, there's never enough anger for Michael Vick. He's got broad shoulders. You're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, entertainment news, science on the march as well, plus the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy. Coming your way a little bit after 1 o'clock at RickEmerson.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Overland Park, Kansas police are asking for help after a meerkat stolen from the Kansas City Zoo was found outside a Petco on Friday. Police say they were called to the store about 5 p.m., Witnesses told officer a white man wearing a hat, hooded sweatshirt, and jeans walked up to the front of the store and put a glass aquarium covered with a towel under the ground. Petco employees found the meerkat inside and called the police.
If I watched Meerkat Manor, I could make more pop culture references right now. Like, was it Petunia? She's so sassy. Or something. But I don't know how that works.
According to the police, it was Napoleon. He must have fought his way to freedom. I don't know.
And I was like, everybody I know watches that show, but like me and probably you. So, yeah, I'm unable to reference it in any sort of glib fashion.
According to police, the meerkat had been missing from the Kansas City Zoo since November 4th. The animal was returned to the zoo on Saturday. Police said meerkats make very poor pets. They bite, and a serious bite can become infected. They have a very strong odor, and they will use their scent to mark their owner and the house as their territory. Being a pack animal, they may become hysterical if kept as single pets.
Here's the thing. Here's what this story needs to be. If we were on the internet right now, I'd do the zany thing where I line it out, and then I let them know that the story was not rendered accurately the first time, but that it's been fixed by me. Here's a little secret, kids. Animals make poor pets. Now, whatever you've got right now that makes a great pet, that's an exception. And the exception proves the rule that you shouldn't keep animals like in your home or your pants or in an aquarium or in your hand or near your baby, which is tasty and soft. You know, animals don't want to be around you. Animals would consume you if they could. And you can tell because they attempt to do so like at every opportunity. I don't even really know what a meerkat is. Is it like a muskrat or a mongoose or something? Or am I just saying that because it starts with M?
No, they're a little mongoosey. They're a kind of a weasel sort of a thing. They're the really adorable things that stand up on their hind legs, and they babysit each other's babies, and they live in burrows that are made out of termite mounds. And
they babysit babies?
They babysit each other's baby meerkats.
Okay. Oh, not stuff. Like human babies.
If you want to learn everything about meerkats, including stuff that absolutely isn't true, go to Conservapedia.
Ah, okay.
The faux Wikipedia, and you will find an entry about meerkats that I wrote that still to this day has not been corrected by anyone. So
it's hard to believe they're not big on the fact-checking over there.
So, because my goal in writing that was hoping that I will be mislearning generations of homeschooled kids about meerkats.
Well done. Here's Don Taylor.
Changes to the menu for inmates saved taxpayers in a Tennessee county six figures, according to the sheriff. Just by removing Kool-Aid from the menu, for example, Rutherford County, Tennessee, saved about $26,000 per year. Inmates are losing out on coffee and all of the associated fixings, and that will save another $26,000 a year.
Well, that's just wrong. That's just, that is, and I mean this sincerely, that's just cruel and unusual. That is just, all right, fine, whatever, fine.
And cutting condiments like mustard, ketchup, salt, pepper, and jelly is saving close to $24,000. Nowhere in the guidelines do we have to offer coffee, said Sheriff Robert Arnold in a news release yesterday. Coffee is a want, not a need. Arnold also made some cost-saving substitutions, such as fried bologna instead of bacon and bread instead of hot dog buns.
Hey, friend, the guy in Arizona is already bucking for the reality show. You're not going to get one, so just knock it off. And because you know the next thing will be the guys like this, they always then go to the thing of like, and we're going to make them wear bright polka dot uniforms on the side of the road because it's punishment. Because they all... You know, they all think that they're going to be like the next Buford Pusser, and that the drive-by truckers will write an album about them. Not going to happen.
Well, altogether, the changes trimmed the budget by more than $111,000, and the sheriff said it's all in order with the state's dietary guidelines. Inmates who still want coffee and cream or salt and pepper on their meals have to buy it themselves from the jail.
Yeah, all right. Well, it's a good thing that they're rehabilitative and not for punishment.
Yes. Industry experts warn that airfares will be expensive this holiday season. Rick Sini of FareCompare.com says package deals with accommodations actually can be cheaper than airline tickets alone.
Now, Rick Sini sounds like a really gay cocktail that some guy would make on a sitcom, you know? Like an ancillary Will and Grace character.
I whipped up a batch of Rick Sini's.
Like, you know, and he'd like sit there and like waggle his pinky at you, you know, extended while he was, you know, consuming it or something, in a mug that had antlers on the side. I'm sorry, so this is, what cut is this?
Travel One.
Travel, all right.
Check out for packages. A lot of times, packages, the air and the hotel, believe it or not, is cheaper than the actual air alone, especially at the last minute.
Sini waves you off of trying to fly on certain days.
You want to avoid the Sunday and Monday after Thanksgiving.
You think?
And the Sunday and Monday after New Year's. Those are the four busiest days and the four most expensive days. It will be at least $100 to $150 more per ticket.
All right, then.
Yes, I remember
that. Here's the thing is I'm planning to go, like, nowhere. Now, I may have some horrible, wonderful visit to my in-laws that may be sprung on me at some point, but that's going to be an external force doing that. Left to my own devices, I plan to stay right here and to not leave town in any way.
Although, remember, if you are planning to travel anywhere over the Thanksgiving holiday, tell them you don't want TSA grabbing your junk. And then email us and tell us your story.
See, now we were talking about that yesterday, but I'm not really sure that we're going to be able to do that because they don't have the thing here.
Well, they might have it where you're coming back from.
Well, that's true. Or I guess so. Yeah, if you're going to like Vegas or something, you know, because I think they have it in Vegas, and I think in San Diego. So if you're landing in San Diego, or if you're going to like, I don't know, maybe Burbank probably LAX, I would imagine has it. So yeah, if you're flying to somewhere and then on the return trip. Also, see, that's the that's when I don't like screwing with people. As much as I'm all for the idea of listeners, you know, going through the experience that they can tell us about it, I almost hate to encourage people to do it on the way home because then it's like at the end of the trip and they just want to get back home and they want to be able to get like clean underwear or something. you know, and then it's like I am more than willing to screw with the TSA, and I do, to screw with the TSA guys, like, as I'm leaving to go to Utah. Because what's the worst that can happen? You don't get to go to Utah. Damn, you know, and then I just get to go back home. But I, you know, when I'm really polite is at the Salt Lake City airport when I'm trying to get home to goddamn Portland because I don't want to be stuck in Salt Lake. So it's, you know, it's, in that way, it's a shame that they don't have it. I mean, if you're listening to us somewhere else, maybe, and coming to Portland,
yeah,
you know, because then if they stop you, then you're no worse at just being at home.
Maybe you're going to, like, Hawaii,
yeah,
for the Thanksgiving holidays, and you're coming back, and you're like,
I'd rather stay here.
Yeah.
No. I'd be obliged if you keep me.
And honestly, isn't a little inconvenience worth, you know, joining the roaring masses who are rising up against the man?
I guess. I wondered when we would sort of get to this point. I really did. Because, you know, you just stand and here's the thing. And you go on, like, message boards, and they give you, as we all know, just such a skewed perspective on humanity. But if you read message boards about this guy, the Tyner guy, who's like, don't touch my junk, which, you know, I should make into a T-shirt and then just start selling later on today. You know, touch my junk and I'll have you arrested. And then, you know, Rick Emerson's a joke. You know, if you read message boards for this guy, if you were to go by just the message board's comment, you would think that we were living in like pre-revolutionary New England or something. Everybody talks so big about, well, if the man ever comes for me, and it's always just some jackass, fat bastard in the suburbs who's on his way to an Applebee's, but, you know, logs into an Ayn Rand website somewhere to talk about, you know how the government is intruding into it. And he's not gonna stand. And he's
they'll have to pry his MIG from cold dead fingers.
And it's just some dick sitting there on his BlackBerry torch, you know, at a stoplight or something, you know, posturing it like he's in the Patriot. So so people say that, but they don't. But people, when push comes to shove, you know, everybody just goes along. It's what you do, because, you know, and that's how they're able to get away with it. Because, like, you got places to be, you know. It's like you got to get somewhere. But there does come this threshold where people say, "Well, now we're stopping." The perfect example of this, and then we'll this is the only thing I say, because otherwise we'll get all behind with this. The perfect example that I always give about just when the will of the populace overtakes the rule of law, the best example of that is not even like weed or anything they always point to in the drug war. The best example of that is how up until, I don't know, maybe 10, 12, maybe 15 years ago, when you go to see a rock and roll show, you kids, they wouldn't let you take a camera in any way. You couldn't take a camera in, certainly couldn't take a video camera in, couldn't take anything that recorded sound in. Everybody at a concert now takes in all three of those things. It's called a cell phone. And the reason you do it is because everybody has one. And they can only stop, like, 5% of the people from rebelling at any one point. They just don't have the resources to stop anymore than that. The government, the law enforcement is predicated on the idea that at any one moment, 95% of the populace will just do whatever they're told. So if everybody just sort of looked at it and goes, we're not gonna, there's just nothing they can do about it. It's not unlike in It's a Wonderful Life when everybody decides they want their money out of the bank all at once and suddenly there's only Mama Dollar and Papa Dollar. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, and honestly, nobody wants to be the first person to stand up and get punished and have everyone looking at them. But honestly, if you're in the airport or something and the guy in front of you is like, no, I don't want you to grab my junk. And they're like, oh, God, all right, keep going. The next guy's going to go, I don't want you to grab my junk either. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know, now you have everyone saying no.
Yeah, I mean, if at any point, like, 90% of the country just decides to do something, like, there is no stopping that. That's just a, you know, and I'm not, you know, whatever, do it, don't do it. I'm just saying, like, that's just the way it works, though. They just don't have the resources to prevent it. So, revolution now.
All right.
But first, let's talk about Squires Electric.
Okay.
SquiresElectric.com, one of our fine business partners here at Legion of News, helping to make this very fine program possible for your education and your entertainment to help you pass the day more easily. You can find out more about them by going to SquiresElectric.com. That is SquiresElectric.com. And, you know, SquiresElectric.com, they've been here for over a decade. They've been in Portland, and they do everything from single houses, from individual dwellings, to businesses, to brand new structures, to revamping structures that are already there. So if you got, like, an office that you're amping up, so to speak, the amount of computer access you need, the internet access, if you're going from just having real basic internet connection, you need broadband, you need the Ethernet wiring redone. It's like, you know, I remember at one point, like, Tim Riley was, you know, he was shifting part of his realty business to home, and the guy did the whole thing of, like, so do you got the Cat 5 wiring? And it's the thing where, like, he just, the knitting of the brow, as you could tell that Tim didn't quite know what he was asking, and it's the how do I answer this question without looking as though I have no idea what I'm talking about. And I'm not even really sure that I know what Cat 5 wiring is. Don Taylor?
I have no idea. Not a clue.
But you need it, right? Isn't that the thing you need?
I have no idea.
See, that's, I got no idea either. And this is where the second half of the Squire's equation comes in, is that they're good guys, you know, and they've, you know, they've been here, as I said, for over a decade.
And they know what Cat 5 wiring is.
They know what Cat 5 wiring is.
And Cat 6 wiring, probably, too.
Cat 52 wiring. Yeah. You should demand that. Just ask for, like, a cat and then just make up a number after. Just see what they
cat
say.
Cat 49.
Moving forward. Anyways, the point is they've been around. They're good guys. We know them. We've talked to them. And you just don't stick around that long if you're just giving people the fuzzy end of the lollipop. So they make sure that you get what you need, you get what you're asking for, you know. And if they think you need something additional done, they're probably going to tell you. But it's not, they're not going to nickel and dime you. They're not going to shove other services onto you. They want to make sure that you are happy with your home, with your business, whether it's the Ethernet wiring, the electrical wiring, whether you are adding a different wing onto your office, or you're just expanding into a different section, you're putting a different room on your house. You want to make sure that it's going to work. You turn on the light goes on. You turn off the light goes off, and you know what? Ideally, nothing else happens. There's no, like, third, option in the middle there, because the third
option... Your garbage disposal doesn't just suddenly go, woo!
That's the thing that always gets you into trouble. Yeah, it's like, you know, you try to turn on the blender, suddenly your hands fall off. I mean, it's, you know...
I hate that.
No, I mean, it's... Then how do you turn... Then you got to use your nose for everything.
Yeah.
And, you know... Don't even ask me what happens when you use your nose. I mean, in polite company, I really can't... I mean, legally, I can't even talk about it. You find out more by going to SquiresElectric.com or 503-252-1609. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. Squires Electric. Here's Don Taylor.
Well, speaking of electricity, Motor Trend Magazine has named GM's Chevy Volt plug-in electric car its Car of the Year. Volt spokesman Rob Peterson says you can charge it using a regular electric wall socket.
Purely plug-in with a standard 110 outlet in your house. You can recharge the Volt with about 10 hours. With a 220 outlet, which is what you commonly use for a washer or a dryer, it takes about 3 to 4 hours to charge.
Doesn't it seem like we should have had this, like, 50 years ago? I mean, we've had cars, we've had batteries, we've had power.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really understand where the X factor is. And I don't...
You saw that documentary,
no, but
you?
See, but I don't buy that, because if that was the whole, I know who killed the electric... But if that was the case, like, they'd be doing it now. You know, like, if GM is, like, mm-hmm. if we buy the assumption that corporations with every passing year run more and more of the world, then they'd be more and more able to keep it off the market. You know? Like, if we buy that we're becoming an increasingly corporate country, which seems to be the conventional wisdom, then it seems like they'd be more and more powerful, thus more and more able to keep it away from the people.
I don't know. I think eventually even large corporations have to, like, deal with the government who is saying, you know... We really are wrecking everything.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's not true.
Maybe
I'm just
you've
saying,
had a good, like, long ride, and it's time to ease into this now.
Yeah, maybe. I just don't know. I just feel like it's one of those things they probably just had sitting in a warehouse, and they're like, I don't know, should we put it out this year? I don't know. We're real tired. Let's, what do you say we just have a long lunch? And then they just put it off,
Then they go back to their office, and there's that giant check from the petroleum corporations sitting on their desk, and they go, Yeah, no electric car this year. What the heck? Martinis for everyone.
So is that what it is? Is like maybe the graft from the electric companies finally exceeded the graft from big oil?
Or my personal opinion is that I think that the world is, our economy, our ecosystem is in much worse shape than even we are being led to believe. And so there's pressure to actually start doing something about it.
Yeah, but electric cars are no better. Electric cars, because all the batteries end up in landfills, and you got to use.
But petroleum is a finite resource, as is coal. But we're using it up, and it's really expensive, and we're fighting wars over it. So maybe it's probably all tied up in that, the whole wars. Middle East, that's where the oil is, kind
like
of a thing.
70 things in that statement that don't make any sense, though. I mean, it's like we don't have, which is not like...
But it's not like a simple ABC,
equation. Let me ask you this. If the theory is that, like, just oil was so freaking expensive, and it was, as you said, wrecking the American economy. So it's like, you see the hippies with the no blood for oil, no war for oil. Well, like, shouldn't gas now be like 15 cents? Because we just went in and took over Iraq and Afghanistan, by the way. So... Shouldn't the economy be better because it's not just the consumers who get hurt by high gas prices. Mm-hmm. That wrecks the entire American economy. So if we did invade the Middle East, for oil, which, and petroleum and gas should be really cheap right now, yet it's not.
No.
So it seems like that's not true. I'm just saying, if that's the logic, then it just it all falls apart. Now, there might be some other way to connect those dots, but that logic just doesn't hold up. I'm not saying our motives are pure. Our motives are never pure. I just think our evil may be of a slightly different stripe than everybody assumes. I think we're evil in a different way than most people think. I mean, we're evil. Don't have any. I mean, it's what we're best at. That's what we export. You know, it's like other countries export textiles, and Japan exports like robots that will like, you know, give you a handy in the back. We export evil.
And terrible, terrible movies.
Yes, since 1776, basically. Just exporting death and terrible movies starring Ben
and
Affleck.
Soft drinks.
Yeah, and soft drinks.
So anyway, Volt spokesman Rob Peters says, if you have a short city commute, you could get by without ever buying gas.
Is this Volt 2?
Yes.
It's my bike. I replaced this on this. I don't know why I did this. I replaced this on the soundboard with a Bristol Palin cut. I don't know why I would have conflated those two things in my head. Makes no sense.
No.
Wonder what Bristol Palin has to say about this. Well, let's just move on.
Okay, let's do a little science news then.
Here's
shall
your
we?
Science. Was that not science news?
Well, it kind of was.
Sounded a lot like science.
Well, I wanted to kind of segue into it from the Squire's Electric thing.
All right. Okay.
And then if we did the music and the science thing in between, it wouldn't quite have been as segue-y.
You're saying my Bristol Palin soundbite wouldn't really fit. It wouldn't have been ensconced comfortably between the two?
Probably not.
Okay.
Spanish doctors are looking for a suitable match from a dead donor to carry out the world's first leg transplant.
Spanish, you say?
Mm-hmm. The Ministry's Transplant Commission last May authorized Valencia's Hospital de la Fe to carry out the procedure, which will involve both legs. If successful, the operation would be the first leg transplant in the world and could offer hope to millions of amputees and injured war veterans.
That's interesting. So how is it that we've had... I mean, there must be some reason for this. So how is it that we've had, like heart and lung transplants, which, you know, to be fair, are tricky and don't always work, but, I mean, that's your heart. It's the most complicated thing that's not your brain. How is it that we haven't had leg transplants already?
They're just starting to figure out how to do, like, hand transplants and face transplants and leg transplants. It's all the ability to do microsurgery and new different kinds of connective, synthetic tissues and all kinds of things to make sure all of the blood vessels actually function and work.
And then it seemed like they would have started with the legs before the face. I mean, that's really cart before the horse business right there. I mean, like, maybe we should start with the toes. No. Go right to the eyes. Okay. I mean, you know, whatever. I don't care.
Well, the recipient will be an unidentified man who had both legs amputated above the knee after an accident. He faces life in a wheelchair because prosthetic limbs are not suitable for him. Of the 13 face transplants that have been carried out so far in the world, 7 were in France, 3 in Spain, 2 in the U.S., and 1 in China, according to Spain's health ministry. In March, it was in Barcelona that they carried out the world's first face transplant. So now we are going to do the double leg transplant, and there's also going to be a fourth face transplant, both of which will be done by Dr. Pedro Cavadas, who's pioneered several transplant surgeries, including one in which he converted a patient's right hand into a left hand in order to move it from his paralyzed right arm to his healthy left one.
Oh, wow, you're weirding me out. How would you even...
You'd probably have to move the thumb, like, all the way to the other side or something. Dr. Cavadas, he's crazy.
Okay, seriously, I feel like I'm stoned. I'm just looking at my hands going, my hands are huge. How could I move them? I don't even know, because it's like the business of the moving, it would almost be easier. I guess it would be easier if maybe you said, well, look, we're going to lose the thumb. We're going to take your hand, turn it around. You'll have the 4 fingers but no thumb. It's the business of moving the thumb to the other side of the hand. That's what weirds me out.
Well, I just guessed at that. I don't know that that's what they did at all. They
wow.
may have just moved,
Well, they must have,
He
though.
May have just moved it to the other hand so that... And the thumb is, like, on the wrong side, well, but you could still use it. I don't know.
Because if they moved it to the other hand altogether, in other words, they wouldn't even be on the same arm then. Like,
right.
So they must have moved the thumb, because really when you think about it, I know...
Because your brain would tell your thumb to...
And also, like, yeah. I know you can do some... Like, you could give a guy, like, the mo, you know, the two fingers on the eyes,
yeah.
But really, you need a thumb to do, like, 98% of the things that you really need to do in this life.
You could do the live long and prosper thing without a thumb. Really?
Yeah. Or you could, you could give like a good back scratching.
Yeah.
You could pick your nose, I suppose. And that really is, I mean, that's...
You could do a peace sign.
And, you know, and I guess you could, pleasure yourself in some sort of rudimentary, you know, fashion, I guess. But it's, you know, but you can't really get you can't really get your pro grip on with that. I'm just saying.
Really, you went there. That's where you went.
Things
I do with my thumb, number three.
Is science
right
not for the betterment of all humanity, Don? I'm just saying. Look, we're not going to get anywhere by lying to people about the nature of humanity and our progress and what it's important for.
A new large species of squid has been found among 70 types gathered during an exploration of the depths of the Indian Ocean, according to the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. The 27-inch-long new species is part of the Caryatid family, with light-emitting organs that attract prey in the darkness thousands of feet down close to the craggy seabed. The six-week Seamounts cruise last year trawled about 7,000 samples of life forms. For 10 days, 21 scientists armed with microscopes worked through intimidating rows of jars containing fishes, squids, zooplankton, and other interesting creatures. And so, again, they also sighted colossal and giant squid, which are thought to range above 32 feet in length.
Wait a minute. Is a colossal squid the same thing as a giant squid?
No, a colossal squid, is even larger than a giant squid.
I don't think that can't be true. There can't be anything larger than a giant. Nothing can kill the Grimace.
Colossal? Wouldn't colossal be bigger than a giant?
What about a ginormous? What about a Gaussian squid?
But anyway, they found a brand new glowing squid that they didn't know about before.
You know, this is the thing, is like, we don't recognize the fact that the enemy is already here. I mean, that's the deal. They're going to find some newsreel footage of, like, you know, of like some sort of a capsule being fired really, really hard into the ground. And Tom Cruise is going to look at it and he's going to say, "My God." And then the next thing you know, it's like they're just going to be coming out of the ocean going,
squid.
You know, and just like coming for you. Squid are evil, man. I'm telling you. They're not, you know, the whales are onto something. That's the reason why we need to save the whales, because the whales are the only ones who recognize the squid menace. The whales have been, it's that whole thing, the Douglas Adams thing about the dolphins are trying to. Dolphins, as we learned yesterday, aren't that bright, and they all seem to be deaf. So it's like, really, that's why we can't understand anything they're saying. The dolphins are probably, like, if you find a normal dolphin, he's probably like, "Hey, just so you know, we can't breathe this oil, just like FYI." But it's like we always get the deaf dolphins, and so it's like, "What do you got?" And I'm like, "What is, I don't know, he's just trying to, I don't know, kick him back out to sea."
Have him give us a flipper signal. He can't, he's deaf, he doesn't know which flipper he is.
Well, meanwhile, the whales, though, it seems like they're the last line of defense there against the squid. So we need to ally with them, like, right now.
Yeah, so let's stop making them do tricks at SeaWorld and start actually, you know, talking to them about the future of...
the squid menace.
Yes. So, some people think of urine as a waste product, but it can actually be quite useful. It's potentially a new source of energy for a fuel cell, and can even power robots. And soon you'll be able to pee on a part of your phone as a way to test for the presence of sexually transmitted diseases. Doctors and technology experts at St. George's University of London are working to combat rising rates of STDs in Britain.
I thought this was like a goof. I think everything now is that story about the woman who claims she got impregnated by the 3D porn. Every time I see a story like this now, I'm like, somebody else is trying to do that thing with the fake story that we all repeat. And yet, no. It apparently is a real story that involves a guy putting whiz on his phone.
Right.
Yeah.
Last year, 482,000 new cases of sexually transmitted infection were recorded across Britain, some 12,000 more than 2008. Here in America, it isn't much better, with more than 120,000 cases of chlamydia reported in 2008, up from about 60,000 just 10 years earlier. Many doctors' offices offer some type of STD test, but researchers are developing a mobile STD testing technology to make it easier to get tested. In Britain, the most common age for a woman to get an STD is between 19 and 20 years old, and between 20 and 23 years old for men. It's the same group of people most likely to own a cell phone. So the person suspicious of the presence of an STD, but who might be too embarrassed to see a doctor, would put a urine or saliva sample on a computer chip the size of a USB device, then plug it into the phone. The chip is a microfluidic device already set up to analyze the sample for signs of disease-related microorganisms.
STD messaging rates may apply.
Within minutes, the person will have a diagnosis. So it diagnoses whether you've got one of a range of STIs, such as chlamydia or gonorrhea, and tells you where to go next for treatment. So there you go.
Okay.
You pee in your phone.
There was something early on in that story that I was gonna mention, but now they might have all got lost in the whole thing of the urine. I was gonna be thinking about urine. I don't even know what I was gonna say. Wait. No, it's gone. Urine really is the wonder drug that works wonders, though. It's here's the
That's
thing.
What they say.
Here's a little fun fact. You know that I won't say the economy of Sweden is based on urine because that it's probably an overstatement. But I will say that if you were to look at a pie chart of the economy, the economic underpinnings of Sweden, a huge part of the money that comes in to Sweden is based on urine. Because Sweden, do you know where, not a majority, but a sizable, I mean, it's like into the big double digits, a sizable portion of Sweden's gross national product comes from? It is the manufacture and export of matches. And matches, Sweden is like the world's lead, like 89% of matches are made or licensed from. In other words, like we got the chemical composition from, or we get the license, the patent on the particular kind of match, like Lucifer's, from Sweden. That is because Swedes were the first ones to create phosphorus. And they did that for a guy who was, I swear to Christ, trying to make gold out of whiz. He just had guys whizzing in buckets, and he kept it in his basement for like a year, thinking that somehow he could make it. And the relationship between how he thought he could turn gold, you know, like get gold from urine, is a little tenuous. I guess maybe just a color thing. And he thought, well, one's gold, the other's gold. Bam, whiz in this bucket. And so guys would do it. And he went back after a year, no gold, but hey, it's glowing in the dark. What is up with that? And what is up with that is phosphorus where they got matches.
And isn't the crystallized bat urine in the bottom of bat caves, isn't that sometimes harvested and used for that purpose, for manufacture of phosphorus?
Well, I would imagine. Well, because we're almost all identical, like in a chromosomal way, that makes sense. I mean, you know, because we all got pretty much the same body makeup, so it seems like our urine is probably pretty similar for mammals anyway. So, yeah. So the Swedes discovered the whole thing of like, hey, we can take whiz and we can turn it into matches. That's awesome, if smelly. But they got like a 100-year head start on everybody else. So now, through the magic of urine, Sweden is like the most prosperous nation in Europe. Well done.
And thus we have ABBA.
Yes.
Urine
is step two.
A new holographic technology being developed at the University of Arizona could eventually let us interact with lifelike images of friends living across the globe. Arizona researchers have made their first demonstration of a holographic display that projects 3D images from another location in near real time. The images are static, but they're refreshed every 2 seconds, creating a strobe-like effect of movement. The researchers hope to improve the new technology over the next few years to bring higher resolution and faster image streaming.
And by interact, they mean have sex with, right? That's what it always means. When they say interact, it's, you know.
Well, that and putting messages inside your droids so that, you know, when your planet is going to be blown up, you can tell Obi-Wan.
Here's the problem with leeching of nomenclature from one thing to another is now it takes me like another half step to get the joke because I didn't know if you were going the phone way or the Star Wars way.
No. Oh, the droid thing.
See, there message you inside you. And then I thought you were doing a lolcat thing, like I'm in your droids leaving your pleas for help.
Mm,
or,
no.
You know, whatever.
So far, the Arizona team has tested out a holographic display of about 10 by 10 inches, showing lifelike images of researchers in a separate lab. The researchers built a similar system 2 years ago that could update images every 4 to 5 minutes, but now it's every couple of seconds. It records the light scattered from objects and uses it to reconstruct a picture of these objects. It is the most lifelike 3D rendition of objects because it uses the same technique as our eyes to visualize our surroundings. For now, though, the holograms are static, like those on driver's licenses that refract light to create a 3D image. Also, the image colors are not true to life, but appear in varying tones of green or red.
I can tell you, this is how I know I can never be a scientist. Like, did you ever just, you know, you just meet people and they just know stuff you don't know and stuff that you could never figure out. You ever want to feel just mentally enfeebled? Go to like a, you know, go to some, say, museum of science, which sounds retarded, but you know what I mean. This is like a real heavy, like technology-based museum where it's not just like dinosaur bones. It's like amazing crap that people built. And you'll just see something like, well, this was built in 1852. What is it? Well, it's a, you know, it's a homemade barium detector. You know, he made it out of spare parts and cheese when he was 12. You know, and it'll be like, you know, or just some, you know, something that Edison just made, you know, that he like, some like advanced like nuclear fission device that he whittled out of a stick, like on his lunch break at Menlo Park.
Yeah, I was just reading a book by the same guy who wrote Devil in the White City, in fact. And it's another book that's about real life people and stuff. And one of the characters in the book, he writes extensively about Marconi.
Yeah.
And Marconi was just crazy.
Yeah.
Just crazy brilliant and started inventing things when he was like 12.
Oh, yeah.
And people just went, no, we don't want to see your inventions, 13-year-old boy. And he's like, but I'm inventing
magical
things.
Talking device. Get out of here with that nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole story of the telegraph and how that came. Weird. Oh, crazy.
Yeah. Well, I'm a huge fan of Philo Farnsworth. Some kid in a barn in Provo, Utah, from where nothing good comes but Merlin Olsen. In a barn in Provo, Utah, he's just sitting there with with a legal pad, but it was just like charcoal sketching, like, I think I can make this thing called a television. Hold on, give me a second. You know, and you can see, actually, there's replications of his original sketch. And also, by the way, when he was 12, he invented electric door locks for cars. So just, you know, chew on that. And by you, I mean me. Wasted my whole life, I have. All right, here's Don Taylor.
That's all the science.
Ah, there you go. That's the end of science. Oh, my point, though, was with the hologram. So, you know, I'm old enough, I mean, and by old enough, I mean just old, that I remember them passing around, like, you know, some kid who was trying to, like, you know, brown-nose the teacher would come to class with, like, some issue of National Geographic or something. During that three-year period in the 80s where everybody subscribed to National Geographic because there was the Afghani chick on the front, and then there was the Titanic thing, and then there was the hologram picture.
Yeah.
And they would pass around the hologram picture. And I remember looking.
Isn't that the crystal skull thing? Is that what that was?
Well, that wasn't the first one. The first one was an eagle. It was a statue of an eagle. It was like a, I don't know if it was a statue from, you know, thousands of years ago, but it was like a clay rendering of an eagle. That was the first, I believe, holographic image on the cover of National Geographic. And so, as such, the first one that was, I think, widely distributed. And then there was the crystal skull, and then there was, it was something else. I don't know. It was just a boob, probably. Because that really is the ultimate application of all this technology, right? The thing about Will.i.am just appearing at, you know, in front of Anderson Cooper, that's all just a prelude to boobs.
And really, why did everybody, like, look at National Geographic when they were
boobs,
kids in the first place?
It is boobs. But you're passing it around. I remember, you know, just looking at that as a kid and being staggered and just amazed by it. And I don't know, it was a few months ago, I was in like one of those stores that sells like old magazines or whatever, and I saw one of those holograms. And even now I look at it and I'm like, that can't be done. It's magic. This is some sort of – there's a mojo happening here and I don't approve. If you didn't know better, you know, you would just assume that there was just some specter inside that was creating that and that, you know, and that you just hoped he was on your side. It's just freaky. It unnerves me, the whole thing.
Four students were rushed to the hospital after reportedly overdosing on a prescription drug that a fellow student brought to school in Hillsboro.
Oh, we better get rid of drugs altogether.
Four students at Raymond Brown Middle School were sick after taking an undisclosed amount of OxyContin.
Wow, really?
All of the children were hospitalized, but authorities have not said how serious the overdoses were. Police did not share the ages or grades of the students.
That's
either.
Your blackout in a can. I mean, really, right there, that is skipping to the bottom of the page. That's going way past the Four Loko and getting right to the nuclear approach.
I'm always shocked by these stories where kids are doing drugs at school. Some kid brings the drugs to school, and then they do them at school. I mean, at least we were smart enough when I was a kid that you did your experimenting with things you weren't supposed to be doing after school.
It is always possible that the kid whose idea this was already high. And he just took my closet. Look what I got.
We'll just take them now. No one will know.
Yeah.
No one will notice.
I would imagine if you have a couple of those, you probably don't think about where you are and what the ramifications of your actions might be.
Oh, kids.
Nope.
Yeah. All right. A passenger in a pickup truck died after the vehicle crashed into a tanker truck in North Portland early this morning. The pickup rear-ended the semi-truck just after 1:30 a.m. near the intersection of North Columbia Boulevard and North Hurst Street. The passenger in the pickup died at the scene, and the driver was rushed to the local hospital with life-threatening injuries. The driver of the semi was also hurt, but his injuries did not appear to be life-threatening. No names have been released, but all the victims were adult men.
Yeah, don't drive into trucks, because you're going to lose that. That's an equation that you will never come out of on the right side of. That's going to end badly for you.
Well, almost any story that involves driving in North Portland at 1:30 in the morning.
There's no good end to that.
No.
That is, as Don Henley would say, somebody's going to emergency and somebody's going to jail. That's the only way that's ending.
Yeah, I used to live in North Portland, and if I had to come home late at night, I would just avoid Lombard.
Yeah.
Because there's like a block, there's a bar every block and a half, you know, in that one long stretch of Lombard.
And as you're driving down Lombard, too, you know, like one out of every three bars The door is being opened by a guy who is staring out at the street, and he is finishing the sentence that begins, "Well, I guess I have nothing to live for now, so..." And then, you know, you don't want to be on the receiving end of that.
Yeah, there's also a college near there, University of Portland, which is a private Catholic college. So it's stocked and
they're
leafed.
Drunk all the time.
And I had off-campus housing on my block, and it's all kids that are away from home and not being supervised for the first time. So I remember sitting in the bar at the end of my block once and having college kids sitting there and listening to them order drinks.
Oh, yeah.
Like the whole, "Okay, let me try that melon-flavored liqueur. Okay, now how about a shot of Jägermeister?
A great thing about...
Give me a Miller." And I'm like, "Oh, that is going to be ugly coming back up later, sir."
The upshot of belonging to a religion that has as its primary sacrament wine is that there's just no guilt associated with drinking at all in the Catholic faith. I mean, it really is literally and figuratively a sacrament. I never knew a priest that didn't just reek of gin. You know, I mean, it was like a sort of halo of bad cigar smoke around them, and then just, you know, and then like a bottle stashed somewhere like in the sacristy.
Yeah. Also, these University of Portland kids just really.
Yeah, that's the second time you've said these kids or the
they
kids.
Were, well, they were children. There's this point where you just realize they're children, and I'm watching them. They would have parties, and then the police would come to raid the parties. And even though there were police cars with the lights like going parked in the street and cops on the side, kids are still walking towards the party carrying 12 packs of beer. And it reminded me, we were sitting on my porch actually watching this happen one night. And it reminded me a lot of the nature documentaries of the penguins who like have never seen man. And so they know
what's
no
he
fear.
Holding? It'll be a friend, I bet.
Yeah. And so they just walk because they've never known any natural predators. So they just walk towards them, waddling with their beer going, "Hello, are you?" And the cop's like, going, "Are you 21?
No.
Why?"
Waddling toward Gomorrah. All right. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Hey, if you ever find yourself in Barcelona and you're missing your arms, you want to get some cotton, first of all, and get some and just plug that up. Once you get that taken care of, well, here's the thing I was actually going to say you might want to say, and then it was all like, you know, "No tener los manos," I guess would be accurate, actually. I don't have any hands.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you probably want more information to come out of you than that, though, and something other than like, So, this is another reason why you want to go to Portland Spanish, to PortlandSpanish.com, and that is the website for Castalia Language Center. Castalia Language Center is based in downtown Portland, and again, you can find out more about them by going to PortlandSpanish.com. They offer Spanish language classes for adults, where you can learn conversational phrases such as, "Hey, my arms seem to have gone. Can you help me out with that, pal?" You know, and in a way that's not going to be misconstrued so they don't bake you into a waffle or something. Because these things are, you know, it's tricky sometimes with language. It's, really, you know, the miscommunication is causes most of the world's difficulties. So you go to PortlandSpanish.com. You find out about Castalia Language Center, where you can learn Spanish, whether you're learning it, you know, from the ground up. Just, I mean, if you have zero Spanish background at all, they've got a class for you. If you, have some Spanish language ability, but you want to polish it, or if you knew it forward and backward once upon a time, but you want to brush up, they can handle that as well. They can also find something that works with every schedule that you've got. No matter what your free time is, you're going to be able to find something that probably works for that. And the class sizes are small, so you're going to get near individual attention. You can learn to speak Spanish in conversation by learning Spanish conversationally. Find out more by going to PortlandSpanish.com and be sure to tell Clara Grebel, hola, and that you heard it here, right here at Legion of News at Cascadia.fm. This is Don Taylor.
Let's do a couple of minutes of entertainment news before we go.
I think somebody has told me it is... No, is it no tango? So apparently it is no tango los manos. I have no hands.
All right.
Okay. I'm sorry, what are we doing? Entertainment news?
Yeah, a little bit of entertainment.
Here's your entertainment news for a Tuesday, right here at Legion of News.
So indulging in an almost... Anyway.
You know you didn't actually finish a sentence there, right?
I realize that.
Okay.
iTunes announced that you're going to be able to get Beatles songs.
Now, here's the thing. Do we know that's all they announced? Because I missed the announcement.
I did, too. And it's all anyone's reporting, though. So I keep thinking
that's... Well, that's because that's what we've been told to do. Steve has ordered it to be so, Don.
And I guess for Steve Jobs, this is a huge deal. I mean, the Beatles first sued Apple Computer in 1978 for stealing their trademark.
Well done.
And so, unsurprisingly... have kind
the relations
of,
have been frosty.
Yeah, have not really wanted to be in bed with iTunes.
Well, and also there's just that whole thing where, you know, the Beatles, God love them, are, and McCartney has said this, the Beatles are hung up on this whole thing that everybody's got to hear the album as a collected work, which is, you know, whether or not that's accurate, you haven't had to do that with Beatles records, like, ever. Because, first of all, like, whatever you'd like to believe, not everybody listens to the album all the way through, even when they were actual albums, like vinyl. Yeah. Sometimes you got something, you go, hey, I just want to hear that. To put it back on side one, that's way better than side two.
And they certainly haven't had any problem with radio stations playing their songs.
Or with putting out anthologies or collections.
Yeah.
You know, which is, and again, I'm not knocking the Beatles. I'm really not. But I'm saying if that was the hang up, and of course, money, but if the hang up was this ideological thing of, like, we want people to hear our songs, you know, as part of a composite work. I mean, I guess I have to respect that, because whatever. I mean, that's their belief, and so, you know, whatever. But it just seems like that is really just the most Potemkin philosophy there, because it's not really true that people have to do that. So I don't know if there's more to this announcement than just the Beatles, or if that's it.
No. They're going to sell 13 remastered Beatles studio albums, the two-volume Past Masters set, and the classic Red and Blue collections. You can buy the individual songs for $1.29 a piece, or download entire albums for $12.99.
Now, wait a minute. Now, hold on. Now, we don't have time to talk. We have to finish this next hour. Mm-hmm. Can we revisit this? Because there's more I want to ask, and I'm not trying to be that guy.
No.
But we don't have time to do it next. We gotta skedaddle. The Rick Emerson Show comes up next, by the way, at rickemerson.com. You can go to rickemerson.com right now, and you can sign up to become a proud, happy listener and a more effective worker, by the way, bringing glory to your mother country. A Rick Emerson listener is a happy and satisfied worker. So you go to rickemerson.com. Don't forget, you can listen free for a week, and then after that, it is the low, low cost of 32 cents a day. And as a 32, you could probably make that just by... You could probably sell your fingernails to some fetishist for more than that.
It would cost you it would cost you days worth of that just to buy a Beatles song.
I was going to say, that's not even half of Eleanor Rigby.
Yeah.
And that's a short song. I mean, really. All right, coming up next hour on the Rick Emerson Show, Boardwalk Empire recap, Dawn's ringtone contest, Taser Watch, Clown Watch, greatest songs ever made, and more. So thank you for listening to Legion of News, which comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, it is Dawn Taylor, advanced technology and magic with Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa, and we will be seeing you again tomorrow at noon for another installment of Legion of News, which you can get later in the day via iTunes as well as a direct download here or at legionofnews.com. So once again, we'll see you again tomorrow at noon. Have a happy and productive Tuesday, won't you please?